Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of the Comic Pod in association with Anfield Index. I'm your host, Rory Greenfield, and this is probably the most long-awaited podcast we've ever thought of. Since we started doing these quite a while back, we always wanted to talk about this film, and we generally always do come back to this film whenever we're talking Marvel. So tonight we're discussing the wonderful Ant-Man from 2 years ago, I think, 2015. Yeah. Stu with me. I am back again, which is quite nice to be back. So Stu's here, and we've got first time guest, who I must say he's probably the most genuine listener we've ever had, who gives us really honest feedback, has really supported us since day one, is a really good advocate of what we do and someone we, you know, really, really appreciate highly for it. It's Ali Thompson. How you doing, mate?
I'm very good, mate. Thank you very much for that. It's just an absolute pleasure to be on. As I say, we just share the same passion. It's just one of the most enjoyable podcasts that I listen to. So
thanks, man. You said that from early doors, and we didn't believe you, but generally speaking, we just thought you'd be nice. But no, we do really appreciate it. We've said from pretty early doors, there's quite a few people we always wanted to have on when the kind of time was right and the subject was right. And we kind of glad we came to this conclusion, because we kind of banded a few ideas around, and it's tricky getting, you know, I know you host quite regularly podcasts now, but for a while, we do find it quite hard to do all these and you know, do the prep and all the build-up and then actually host them, because things come along all the time.
This is, I think this is the most rhythm we've had this year.
Yeah, because last year, actually, in fairness, we were doing mostly one a week. And then, yeah, it does get pretty difficult, just because, I know there isn't always, I mean, there's always things you can talk about, but it does seem to be relevant. And for something like this is just a film that we all love, have wanted to talk about for a while. And, you know, there is a second film coming out, and, you know, Paul Rudd's Ant-Man, you know, was involved in Civil War, and obviously he's going to be involved in Infinity Wars next year. So there's plenty to cover, really. We've got something which we've not done for a while, which is a legendary quiz. Stu's got a few questions, so I'm hoping he's going to go easy on you as a first timer anyway. We'll see.
I am not. I doubt it. I am not going easy. I watched it a couple of weeks ago when we started trying to put this together, and I pretty much watched the film with my laptop next to me, and I just came out with about 15 questions, and then I whittled it down. They're not that bad. It's not the worst one we've ever done, put it that way. I think it's fair. So it's the standard format. So we've got five normal questions. And then if you get 5 out of 5, you get the chance to go for the bonus 6th question, which so far only one person has ever actually done, and that was Zach, who is still at the top of the leaderboard. And that was episode 6, which was the 27th of January last year. So he, wow. he's, you know, before too long, he'll be 18 months unbeaten.
No pressure.
The score to beat is 2 out of 5. Sorry, no, I tell a lie. The score to beat is 1.5 out of 5, which was Gags in the first week.
Gags, yep.
So as long as you get 2, that's absolutely fine. You still get to take the piss out of him.
That's more than usual.
Yeah, just wait till we get Hans on. Hans is going to get 7 out of 6. He's definitely going to nail it.
Hans will break records. All we've got to do is track him down, the elusive bastard.
He's elusive, man. One week he's in Sierra Leone, and the next week he's in Sweden scouting. He's just incredible.
And now he's in Germany watching this bloody Audi Cup. He's a well-travelled man, is our Hans.
Right, let's get on and do this.
Right, let us kick off. Question one. What year is the initial flashback set in?
Oh, do you know what? I just watched this earlier. Just trying to prepare for that. That's one thing I didn't even look at. I'm going to say, I'm just going to take a guess. I'm going to go 1958.
Nope. No. Way later. It's 1989.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
I thought it was earlier than that as well.
I was thinking it was before Captain America time, sort of.
No. Okay. Question number two. What is Scott's nickname for his daughter?
Peanut.
Peanut. Correct, yes. Sir. Right. Let me mark them down. Okay. Question number three. What are the ants which can conduct electricity commonly known as?
Oh, I hate you, Sue. I mean it in the nicest way possible, of course.
So it's not the fire ants?
No.
We'll have to push you for an answer.
Yeah.
No.
Crazy ants.
Crazy ants.
Okay, question number four. What is the first object that Scott hits with the growth disc in the back garden?
Oh, Christ. Never expected any of these.
I thought that's quite an easy one.
Yeah.
When they go in the back garden and he first gives them the discs that grow and shrink things, he launches one and he hits a something.
No, I'm going to have to pass.
Should we give him a clue?
Yeah, go for it.
You might find one of them holding a fishing rod.
What do you call them? A gnome.
Yes, a garden gnome.
Yeah.
Correct. I'll let you off of that because I'm thinking I might have been a bit of a dick on these questions now, and especially...
Well, no, it's tricky because you only know what you know. It's one of those. Yeah. You can prepare as much as you want. Stu screwed me over when he basically asked me how many types of tea were in Scott Pilgrim. And I knew which one they drank, and I almost remembered all of them, but I couldn't remember how many.
You got close. I think it was something like 16, and you said about 13.
I said 14,
Right.
I'll never live it down.
Question five. Our favourite character from the whole film, Luis, what song is he whistling the first time he walks into Pymtech? Now, this is quite good when it's about Ant-Man. Admittedly, I only noticed this when I watched it the last time, which must have been about the sixth time I've watched the film.
And you're a far bigger geek than me for this film. I'm trying to even think back to the part of the film.
I was just about to start whistling it then.
Go on, whistle a little bit.
It's a small world.
Yes.
It's a small... That was good whistling, man. Is that like a hidden skill I didn't know you had?
It is.
Good whistler.
The joke is, I'm not whistling with my lips.
I have a long shaft.
I need to burn this headset. So...
Jesus Christ.
I
always said you were talking with your bollocks, didn't I?
Yeah. It's a skill. I'm not going to tell you how I learned it, but... I did. So that's 3 out of 5. You don't get the bonus question, but we ask it anyway, just on the off chance. When Ant-Man is fighting with Yellow Jacket, a song by which band is accidentally started by Siri when they're inside the briefcase?
Oh,
I'm not even going to cheat, right? I actually wrote this down.
Nice.
I wrote notes in a notepad the last time we planned to do it.
Go on.
And it was written down, and I'm not going to, I can't remember it, but so I'm not going to cheat. But I genuinely do have it written down 5 yards away from me.
Go on, check.
Go on then.
If you can get it within 10 seconds.
You know what? I might be able to get it because I haven't seen these for 2 months, these questions. Is it The Cure?
It is. And the song is called Disintegration.
I was going to say Disintegration. I was.
Brilliant. I can't remember what one of them said something and then Siri plays.
Yeah. It says something to do with The Cure to the, I don't know, something or other. Yeah.
Something like that.
It's cool, man. That whole scene, I mean, Jesus, we'll come back to that actually. Because
that's a respectable 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I'll take that. I got some help. But you know, like when you watch the film, I did the same as you, Stu, like obviously in a different way. And I started writing down silly things that.
Oh, God, mate, you wouldn't believe what I wrote down for the Scott Pilgrim quiz. Because I knew he was going to sting me with some absolute bastard. And I wrote down completely the wrong things. It's just the way your brain works and stuff, and Stu's brain works. And they're very.
I even try to remember like all the combinations of how he broke into to get the suit and
nice.
And then Louise's like you know who told them all the story. I try to remember the whole story.
I was going to do one of them.
But you know what? if you can do Louise's whole end narrative statement, you get 6. I don't care. He's the best, man. Yeah, I mean, he's the best. I think he's the, and I think we spoke about this on the San Diego Comic-Con thing we did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
That Luis is getting quite a pivotal role in the next film. That's probably the best news you could ever get. Do you know what I mean? I thought Michael Peña was probably, you know, as good as Paul Rudd is. He just stole the show a little bit.
As far as non-superhero sidekicks go,
yeah,
he's probably comfortably the best out of all of the Marvel films by a mile.
Wouldn't you love him to just randomly become a like sidekick in a suit or something?
I want him to be in Infinity War for just 15 seconds, 20 seconds, something like that, where it cuts to him and he tells one of his bollocks stories and then it goes away. Imagine Luis trying to explain to somebody that Thanos has just come to Earth and is taking down the Avengers. Just think about it, and then you just chuckle away for a good, you know, 5 or 10 minutes.
I was arguing with someone today at work about, you know, Marvel versus DC, and she doesn't like Marvel films because she thinks they're too...
What?
You know, too upbeat and too, you know, lighthearted.
You don't need
and
that
and DC
kind of
films are all edge and all, you know, darkness and edge and all this kind of jazz.
Well, if she never seen Winter Soldier, that wasn't very fucking happy.
Well, exactly. There's a lot of Marvel films that are pretty edgy, actually, and pretty dark, but...
All of them have... None of them are really, like... No. La, skipping through a field of fucking pear drops.
No. But if you say that they don't do humour well or they don't understand comedy in the way it should work in cinema, you haven't seen Ant-Man. It's always my suggestion.
That's
you know what I mean?
Stupid. You haven't seen Ant-Man. You haven't seen either of the Guardians films.
Yeah.
That just doesn't work.
No, I think it's that whole kind of consciousness that comics have to be translated into exact frame for frame to cinema. But then the comics, Marvel comics, are generally known to be humorous. Do you know what I mean? That's the difference, I guess, in approach. They're a lot more lighthearted, especially Guardians and Spider-Man and stuff. It's always been known as being that way. So
Spider-Man's had some pretty fucked up things over the decades.
Well, no, completely. But in terms of Peter Parker being quick-witted.
Oh, yeah. Very lighthearted character from that point.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot to talk about. It's obviously a couple of years old. And it was probably me and Stu always say this, but it is probably the most kind of low-key Marvel film in terms of you wouldn't have thought Ant-Man would translate to being a big successful film. It grossed similar to Deadpool, didn't it? Or just Dunder, I think, which is pretty impressive.
I think it did about 550, let me check, 519 million off 142 million budget. So it made...
Yeah,
a pretty reasonable amount, and I remember
that's a big number for a moderate cinema release. Do you know what I mean? That's a big number.
I said before it launched, it's not going to work because he's a cheap rip off of the Atom, and the atom wouldn't be very good in a film. Even with Paul Rudd, I thought, well, Paul Rudd will be great, but the action will be shit. Paul Rudd's not going to be able to do fight scenes. But that's what made it so good, because it was a surprise. Everyone thought it would be shit,
yeah.
And so many people walked out just creased laughing. I walked out, my stomach was hurting because I'd been laughing at some of the points so much, mostly the Louise stuff, or yeah. Anything where he was working with the gang, because the gang were just so hopeless.
Yeah, they were kind of the epitome of the useless kind of group of cronies. Yeah. And when he said, you know, I know some guys, it's like, no, not those guys. Yes, yeah. I know some guys. I thought they were all brilliant, actually, in all their small, obviously small kind of cameo roles. But I think that's what was great about this film, that I don't think anyone was trying to take center stage necessarily. And everyone just kind of worked really well in harmony, you know. The whole film isn't too heavy, but it's got a couple of darker sides to it. I mean, the villain is genuinely pretty damn scary at times, you know, which it did surprise me. And it deals
with some pretty hard stuff, doesn't it? If you think about the basic point of Scott Lang, he's yeah. been away, he comes out, he can't get access to see his daughter. He has to sit back and watch his daughter being raised by another man. You know, it's dealing with some pretty heavy stuff, and he's trying to get yeah. his life back on track.
I think the other man is Ray Romano's brother, though, isn't it? So it wasn't that much of a heavy storyline. He might not be that actor, but he's very similar.
I think it might. I don't think it is.
No, he's very similar, though. Very, yeah. very similar. Ali, what were your kind of first impressions when you saw it? Were you pleasantly surprised, or did you expect it to be good?
Extremely. I was much later to Ant-Man than all of you. I didn't even hear about it coming out to the cinema.
It wasn't a huge kind of marketed everywhere kind of film.
I think it was actually one of you two that recommended it to me.
That sounds like us. We do a public service.
You know, yeah. I mean, I had seen, I think, like most of the other Marvel films that had come out around the time, I'd seen all them. And I think it was just like maybe one night on Twitter, you know, looking for a movie suggestion, and somebody said, have you seen it? And I'm pretty sure it could have been one of you two. And, you know, I just watched it, and it was just one of those films that I instantly loved. So I didn't have the unexpected, well, I did, because I'd seen this Ant-Man film on, I think it was on Netflix at the time.
Yeah, it's been on Netflix for a while, yeah.
And it was like, oh, Ant-Man, nah, I'm not watching that. And then it wasn't until somebody else recommends it to you. And now it's one of my favourites. And like, I'm not right into the actors and directors as you are. I'm just the child fan. But Paul Rudd is bloody brilliant.
That could be a line for life in general. He is just brilliant in most things.
Well, that's how I now feel. Purely because of you, Stu. Because your love affection with him is ridiculous. But I'm just engrossed in everything he does. Like, I now follow him on Twitter because his tweets are funny, and his little videos he posts up on Facebook from like when they were doing Civil War, just genuinely brilliant. And I think it was you that said, Rory, as you say, oh no, it was you that said, sorry, Stu, about, you know, even Paul Rudd couldn't make this. Well, he kind of did.
He
was like the glue that brought everyone else together.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, and it just, I thought the film was just remarkably well done. For when you think of a concept of an Ant-Man, you're like, nah, especially for not the Marvel or comic book heroes, more the just a casual fan, you know. Yeah. Nobody's going to look at that like, what?
But it's not glamorous, is it? It's not got the glamour and the pizzazz of, say, Iron Man. It's not got the acceptability
Captain America
of Spider-Man and, or Captain America.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's such a left field pitch.
And I think that's why it's
surprising.
It was
a left field pitch. Yeah, it was. Like, the whole thing from day one, you know, I don't think they would have, and this is me going to talk about Edgar Wright, and I'm going to keep it brief. I don't think Marvel would have necessarily considered it if it wasn't a director and a writer that wanted to make the film so much, because that's, you know, like Stu always says, you know, that a lot of these directors have got a lot of passion for comics. It's what they have an interest in, and it's what kind of draws them to Marvel, and it's what Marvel, you know, it draws Marvel to them. It's very much a kind of working relationship, that everyone's got passion towards working on the same project. the difficulty with this production, and the reason I'm always still surprised it turned out so well, is that Edgar Wright, who has done, if you don't know him, and you've not listened to me ever, but if you don't know him, he's done the British, very British kind of take on different genres. So he did the Cornetto trilogy, which is Shaun of the Dead, which is his homage to zombie horror, and then Hot Fuzz, which is kind of British action style, and then World's End, which is the kind of sci-fi take, but not as successful as the other two, and then Scott Pilgrim, which we obviously really love on this podcast, and then recently Baby Driver, which is kind of completely left field for him, but it's a really great film, and he's a director that does do projects all the way through. So like your Nolans, who writes, directs, produces, you know.
Oh, he's there from day one, isn't he?
Exactly. And he was in pre-production for Ant-Man until Marvel were basically ready to release it. And he'd worked on the script with Joe Cornish, who was famous from the Adam and Joe show back in Channel 4 days years ago, who did Attack the Block, which is a really cool little B-movie, British kind of B-movie, which is kind of horror genre. And, you know, the script was sound and, you know, casting in place. But I think Edgar's story was going to be more about the Michael Douglas character, which I think you know, Stu.
Yeah. He's the original Ant-Man in the comics. And then Scott Lang came along after.
And so we thought, and whatever everyone read, was it was going to be Douglas as the focus and then maybe handing the torch at some stage, rather than the focus being more on Paul Rudd from pretty much the get-go, bar the odd flashback. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I think what the issue there was that they fell out over the script and the rewrites. And I think Marvel since have maybe backed away or worked a little bit more collaboratively with their directors, because it was quite a big falling out for a director. And he is a big director.
It was also the length of the project, wasn't it? Because he was attached to it for, was it something ungodly, like about 7 years?
It was 7 or 8 years. And that wasn't necessarily attached in, you know, written contracts and all the rest of it. It was, he wants to make this film.
It was the ideas, wasn't it? If I want to do this, oh, well, we want to do it. What about if we do it like this? And obviously they'd have a meeting, then go away for 6 months, then have another one. But it was the same with Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool. He was attached, as they say, to the project from, not even from day one, it was from day zero. And it's really sad. Whatever you think of Edgar Wright, whether you're a big fan or not, it's sad that the guy you put that much time into it wasn't able to be there until release. And I do wonder if him staying till the end could have been the difference between it being a very good film and a great, you know, if that could have been what turns it into one of people's top five MCU films.
I think it could have, you know, I love the film, don't get me wrong. It's extremely likable. But I think with Edgar Wright, because I'm such a Scott Pilgrim fan, and I think him maybe working with the cast and using his visual effects, because he's known for being, you know, quite pioneering. You know, if you've seen Scott Pilgrim, that he edits things extremely quickly. Baby Driver is a huge success. So at the end of the day, it is a shame. It is disappointing. But you've got to give the director who came in credit, because he was picking up the pieces.
Peyton
really,
Reed,
because,
isn't it?
You know, yeah, and he's
and Peyton, got Peyton Reed's just started putting out a couple of behind the scenes pictures now of they've just started production of Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is obviously a direct sequel. At the end of the first one, spoiler if you haven't seen it, but if you haven't seen it, what are you doing listening? you just finally get to see the daughter's wasp suit, where she's taken over from her mum. They've now cast the mother. They've cast Janet Van Dyne as Michelle Pfeiffer.
Which is a really good bit of quality, again, like Michael Douglas.
So Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer is a pretty hefty fucking Hollywood, you know, royalty combination. So it started well. There was a behind-the-scenes picture that came up, and it had Doctor Strange in it. So I don't know whether that's from the new one or if that's from Infinity War or something, but...
Yeah.
Bit of an odd one.
I'm not sure. But it's intriguing. I mean, you know, if you've seen that man, I think Evangeline Lilly is a great character, to be honest. I think her interaction with Paul Rudd is genius, especially when she kicks the shit out of him, essentially.
Oh, God, yeah. They go from a genuine, really deep-seated dislike, don't they, to a sort of mild tolerance to obviously they end up together at the end.
Yeah, I mean, her arc is interesting as well. I mean, from a perspective of Michael Douglas doesn't want her to wear the suit because he's trying to protect her. Like, he tried and failed to protect her mum, essentially. Do you know what I mean? And that's what... There is a bit of story and
it's like it's his redemption arc, isn't it? I couldn't save your mother, so I'm sure as hell going to save you.
Yeah, and it is interesting that her relationship, again, with the villain is kind of... It's very rare, I mean, Loki obviously aside, it's very rare that the villain is so closely linked maybe with the hero. And, you know, he doesn't know Paul Rudd's character necessarily, but Michael Douglas and Evangeline Lilly. It's kind of weird. That's quite Spider-Man-esque.
Yeah.
You'd agree with that. But it's usually like a doctor that knows, like a scientist that knows Peter Parker, and that's usually the kind of classic formula, you know?
No, that's a pretty good... pretty good comparison. Yeah,
it's got a couple of... Do you see some similarities with Spider-Man? I don't know if it's just me, but if you watch Spider-Man Homecoming, it's definitely... I feel like Homecoming's taken a couple of things from Ant-Man in terms of the way it...
Oh, I thought you meant from the characters, because I'd say...
I mean from the characters,
I do more with Hank Pym than Scott Lang, because Hank Pym is like the troubled genius, whereas Scott... I mean, I've not read much Ant-Man but I know Scott's whole thing was he was a reformed criminal and that, so it was a...
No, I mean more... Different. I mean Hank, and then I mean like the villains in terms of being closely, you know...
The close to home thing is definitely Spider-Man-esque, and it's more, if anything, even if it wasn't Spider-Man-ish, it's very typical comic book, isn't it? Of like you say, the villain is... the doctor or the neighbor or the childhood friend or something like that. Whereas I can see that.
Some comics go like the complete reverse of that. You'll go villains that are completely, you know, otherworldly. Do you know what I mean? And I know we get to Thanos, but you know, you'll literally get to that point, or you go to those, you know, Spider-Man's always kind of people within, yeah, the experimenting and things go wrong and that kind of, you know, that kind of feel to it. So it had a couple of things that triggered to me that it's got that kind of Spider-Man feel to it. But I mean, character-wise, is there anyone? Oh, let's talk about Luis. But is there anyone, Ali, that you really like other than maybe the main couple of characters in this?
Yeah, I think Hank's actually my favourite character.
He
comes up with... Yeah, he really is. Even from like the flashback scene right at the start, you know, the first one you see, and even his quick one-liners when he comes back. We'll speak about lines in moments, I'm sure. But
if
you've got him lined up,
the one that's probably one of my favourite one. It's like I can't even remember. I think it's Stark. It says it. It's a long time no see, or how are you or something. And Hank just returns back, "How's your face?" Just because obviously he punches them, it's just great. Yeah. Just a quick, you know, you've got this old man walking through. Obviously, as you say, a genius, science genius. But just for him to come out with that line very early on in the film, just excellent. So one that the kids will still obviously probably just over their head for any kids watching it, but the adults still get that little kick out of it.
I think Douglas brings a massive like gravitas to it.
He does.
He's just such an experienced actor. I think he's very smart casting.
Seems to be almost becoming a little bit formulaic now. For every film that they're doing, get one member of the genuine elite. So getting Michael Douglas, or look at Ragnarok, getting Jeff Goldblum and Kate Blanchett.
You're going to say Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Goldblum's fucking brilliant, but I think Cate Blanchett is an incredible one because she's like Michael Douglas. When she's on screen, she's got that kind of poise. She owns any scene that she's in. So you think of that as a villain. And, you know, in contrast, you think of that for the hero, for Michael Douglas. It's a hell of a, appearance to have on screen, to have that kind of charismatic, you know, leading man type on screen, especially in a superhero film.
It adds credibility.
Definitely, yeah.
Outside, you know, not to me, you and Rory's, to the, you like our partners, or, you know, people who don't like comic stuff or superheroes and they're just going along. They see those actors there and they're like, oh wow, maybe it's not, you know, it's not this
it's
childish
not just
the thing. Because they're not going to put their name to it if it's, you know.
I was about to say, I'm not going to slag, say, like De Niro, but you look at some of these, like, Well, I am going to slag De Niro a little bit. Dare I do that? But you look at some of these actors that are maybe later in career, and they, like, they're huge kind of A-listers from the 80s as such. And they don't normally touch stuff like this. It's what they normally go down is the kind of bad comedy roles, or, you know, just
what,
things
you mean,
that,
like,
almost,
that dirty grandpa?
Well, shit like that. Yeah, and even the Meet the Fuckers and all that kind of jazz. Yeah. You know, it's for someone of like De Niro's caliber, and then he's almost in really weird, like, rom-commy type things, you know?
It's obvious why he's doing it, isn't it? The roles have dried up. And it's probably the same for Michael Douglas. He's probably not doing much else, but I bet a lot of people, when this was passed to them, would have gone, well, it's a comic film. I'm not the lead. I'm not even, you know, the second or third. You know, I'm way down the list.
No. Yeah.
But when he's on screen, he's commanding a lot of respect from the people around him. And technically, he kind of is the lead, because it's a continuation, isn't it? This is almost like a second Ant-Man film. We just haven't seen the first one. There's been 20, 30 years of it that's gone before. And hopefully...
They did really well, you know, to do the flashbacks and the way it kind of...
They did. The way they shot those...
You learn enough about him and you know, his role as a kind of pioneering scientist. And
soldier.
You know, yeah,
the
soldier.
Those scenes
exactly.
When he's in Pymtech and they're showing that really grainy footage of him taking out the soldiers... Like you say, it's just enough. They don't have to go in and show him wearing the suit in, you know, 1960s or something and show him shrinking down. Just give you just enough little droplets of information, and then you can put the rest of it together in your own head. And that it's like when you see horror films, isn't it, where you don't see the villain until, you know, 20 minutes before the end. All the rest of it, it's just suspense and make you feel the gap.
Imagination.
Exactly, man. And what is a comic film without imagination?
Yeah, and they don't need to feed to your, you know, I like the fact that it's not an overlong and overproduced kind of film. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have the budget that some of the bigger budget Marvel films or DC films would have.
140 million, you think a lot of that must have been taken up just with the scenes of him actually being small, let alone...
Yeah, a lot of the CG in the production would be into that. And there are, you know, there are... quite a lot of locations, and I mean, the fight scene at the end is an incredible scene.
Long scene, that whole bit where they're in Pymtech, between the fighting, all the stuff with the
last
guard,
20-25 minutes of the film, really,
all the stuff with
chunk.
The ants, because that, I mean, that is CG overload, isn't it? Because they've obviously got the ants and the location of them being in the servers and the sewers and everything. That, I mean, You can instant. I'm actually surprised that the budget wasn't higher when you think it's so heavy on CG, but it's subtle, isn't it? I mean,
it is subtle. The ant scenes, I mean, the scenes when he's underground and the ants are up close are generally done extremely well.
Yeah.
If you put a close eye to the scene when he's going through the water pipes and then he's climbing up the ants and all that jazz, I'm not sure it would hold up. Maybe in 10 years, you don't, you know, it's one of those things. But I saw the scene with the ants, you know, when he originally wakes up in their house.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all crawling around on the floor. That's one of my favourite scenes, because I've been to a rainforest before, been to, like, the Amazon before, and I saw bullet ants, and they are the scariest looking things I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen tarantulas and snakes and spiders, but because ants, they hurt so badly, and the floor in there is covered with them. And I just thought it was genius that he had to put his feet down, you know, and it just made you quite tensed, you know, because you just think, if he stands on one, and it would feel like he's been shot with a gun, which is quite
extreme.
And it's
a chain reaction, isn't it, as well? Because once one gets you, the rest of them join in. And that think about how weird that must have been for him to film. Because they've obviously gone to him, right, imagine the floor is covered with these horrendously painful...
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
And, you know, you've got to be really dainty. And while he's doing all of this, they've got... I think Evangeline Lilly stood at the foot of the bed, isn't she?
And yeah,
she's quietly judging him.
And he just doesn't know what to make of any of it, because this is just after he's woken up, after passing out, isn't it? After wearing the suit. I think all the scenes with the suit and all the scenes, particularly when he's training and he's trying to go through the keyhole.
The keyhole is just poor.
The keyhole's great, yeah.
That's just him at his slapstick best.
Yeah, and when he's doing the underground scenes and trying to learn, and he keeps popping up in the ground in the garden, do you know what I mean? And enlarging, it's just genius, man. They just make it work so, so well, because I think that's where Paul Rudd comes into his own, because the guy got in incredible shape for the film. And his comedy chops are clearly there. But we always kind of said he was quite similar to...
Chris Pratt,
yeah, exactly. So you kind of... You're going a little bit left field in terms of someone with comedic background, but equally who, you know, has to deliver as a leading man. Because let's be honest, Paul Rudd's not known for that, is he?
He is, but only in, like, rom-coms.
Yeah,
I don't think he's ever been in this. But if you were to split it down the middle and say, well, you can either have a leading man type, and you've got to try and hope that he's going to be funny, or you've got a guy who's really good at the comedy, and you can hope he can be a leading man. I would do what they've done, because I don't think you can teach comedy. You're either funny or you're not. You've either got the timing or you've not. You can grow into a role. You can grow in stature and, you know, expand into the scenes have you. But if you're not funny, if you can't sell a one-liner, it's not going to work. And that's where Pratt
you've got to give credit to people like Chris Evans and stuff, because he, as Captain America, you wouldn't have thought necessarily had any kind of comedic stylings to him, but he can play the leading man well. Do you know what I mean? But actually, well, I guess he's been in Scott Pilgrim and
he's
funnier, you know, those
than I
kind
thought
of roles.
He was. He's clearly got it, but he's maybe never had the roles to show it. But maybe in his audition.
Someone like Robert Downey Jr. is the epitome of the dual role.
Oh,
because
God,
he's clearly like the most charismatic man on scene ever.
Even when he's the most charismatic.
And also, he's a leading man. He's been born to be a leading man. Do you know
he's
what
the
I
most
mean?
Charismatic man on scene, even when he's not in the scene. He's still just in the background being charismatic and hilarious. He's just brilliant. I mean, even when you do the press tours, he's never off. He's Tony Stark, even when they're sat in a bloody... You know, at Comic-Con or sat at a premiere in Berlin somewhere. You know, he's always just hilarious.
Have you seen Chef? I think you haven't, Mr.
Yeah.
John Favreau film.
Yeah.
So he's in that, isn't he, in a very kind of brief cameo where he gives him the food truck. And again, you're just looking at the guy going, yeah, you're just effortlessly cool.
He is.
Ali, that's a film you would like, actually. Just by
I've
way.
Seen it. Seen Have it countless you? Times as well, yeah.
Oh, good man. He's just brilliant in that, isn't he?
It's hard not to, isn't it, especially when you start talking about a Marvel film. It's like every character has got like a bit of them in it, the one-liners and the little quirkiness. I mean, he was the original.
He was.
Yeah, and he does inspire, you know, you look at it, and I do think he inspires the others in the way it kind of has come off, because I don't think there would have been room for people like Paul Rudd and Chris Pratt if he hadn't maybe set the tone. Do you know what I mean? I think he is the one that everyone looks to and says, yeah.
Well, we've said before, hasn't he? Even though, you know, for a relatively young age, he's the grandfather of the MCU, because he started it and he's been ever present through pretty much in some way, shape or form. He's had his fingerprint in most of the films, even if it's just been, you know, a name check of such and such Stark thing. You know, Tony Stark / Iron Man has been a part of all of these films for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard not to be influenced by that. And then you look at the man himself, and he definitely pulls everyone up around him. People that are acting with him act better and have got a lot more substance to them. He just seems one of those people. Right. I mean, he's going to do, I'm sure working with him is going to do wonders for Tom Holland, you know, for his process and
Favreau as well, to an extent. I think when we're going to talk about Spider-Man, that's one
should
of the
be
best things about
week.
It. That's one of the best
of
things about it, man. You got that kind of experience, and it does tell in cinema. And I think that's why we're saying, you know, speaking so highly of Douglas, because it does make the difference. Do you know what I mean? It really does.
It absolutely does.
Douglas is almost like it's almost like the Alfred, you know, it's almost like that senior role that's, it's the voice in his head, isn't it? Because he's the one that's talking Paul Rudd through things when he's flying and learning to do what he does. And I just thought, you know, moving on to the film itself, in terms of like the action scenes, is there any particular ones that stand out? I think we've got to talk about Falcon in a minute because it's just incredible.
But the Falcon fight scene was actually going to be the first thing I mentioned, because it's not just the fighting, it's the lines as well. He's so apologetic because he's kicked the shit out of an Avenger. And it's his proving ground, isn't it? It's where he sort of proves to himself, and more importantly, where he proves to Hank that he's not as shit at this as you'd think he's going to be. But
he thinks he's a good thief. Good. I think that's all he thought he was. Do you know what I mean? Just a good thief.
But that's the point where he really believes that he might be, maybe not a hero, but that he believes that he's able to do the rest of the job besides just the stealing bit. But all of the action is good. I would like to know how much of those action scenes he shot, because I think he's done quite a bit of them, because he got himself into ridiculous shape. And I don't think you would do that and then just be content to be like, right, I've thrown the first punch, I'm going to hand it over to Bob over here to do the rest of it.
I've said before, I get equally annoyed and angered in equal measure about the fat or the less kind of, you know, muscular actors in Hollywood suddenly becoming in ridiculous shape.
Oh,
it's like they've got their comedy and then suddenly women just fall all over themselves, because Chris Pratt is the example of all examples where he's just a fat guy who's very funny, and then they just absolutely adore him because he loses
four stone.
No, he's like,
hi, look at me, I'm gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, mate, it's like, just not
fuck
fair.
Off, you can be one or the other. You're either funny and fat or hilarious and, like, weedy. Like me, I've gone for hilarious and weedy. It's my answer.
Well, it works.
I'm taking that as a compliment.
Well, take it, man. It's fine. It doesn't happen often on this podcast. But I think the action scenes, and then obviously that scene, I think, with Falcon is just genius. And obviously, it's great because it kind of just, without needing to kind of introduce him to the MCU, it's just a more subtle way of doing it. Do you know what I mean? If you've seen that film, and if you haven't seen it, if you watch Civil War, the way he's introduced is perfect. I mean, you know, talking about Paul Rudd, he's again almost steals the show in that film, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. That one of my favourite lines from Civil War is when he gets out of the van.
Yeah.
Thinks for thanking of me, and he goes, "Hey, I know you. You're great as well." He's just. I'd like to think that bit was ad libbed. I hope they gave him a rough
do you know
idea.
What?
I think it was.
Judging him, it was, because most of the films he's in, all the kind of Judd Apatow films, you know, 40-year-old Virgin and then all the Anchormans and stuff, they're mainly ad-libbed.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't. But especially, I mean, you do the very good giant man laugh, but it's just that scene. Exactly. See, that scene alone, man, I just think he fits so well in the MCU, which is just such a weird thing for me
it
to expect
work.
Because it shouldn't work, man. That's what Ali was saying before. He just makes it, he makes it work. He does bring it all together. And then Luis just expands upon it. But
my favourite line of the whole film, though.
Go on, let's hit some lines.
Well, when he picks him up after the prison and he's asking how he's doing, and he goes, "Well, my girl left me. My mum died, my dad got deported, but I got this cool van." And he's like, yeah, the van's great. And this is about, what, 2.5-3 minutes into it, and you're going, oh, this is
right away.
There's no fucking about, it's just straight into it, that line of the film. Basically, the top five lines is the best five things that Luis says. Each one of his stories counts as a line. When he's talking about that girl that's stupid, crazy, fine, and stupid, crazy, fine.
The one at the end, you know, when he's talking about, like, the Avengers are looking for him, basically, and he just ends it by saying, yeah.
Yeah.
just the way he says, yeah.
It's just incredible. That whole narrative at the end of the film, because it switches to so many people, it's just perfect, because it's so in synchronization. Do you know what I mean? You don't expect it to look like he's, you know, he's basically talking for them, but it just works so insanely well.
Oh, yeah. His voice coming out of Falcon's mouth and his coming out of Stan Lee's mouth is a bit of a head fuck.
It is, but it works. It really works. The sidekicks, like we said, are really good in it. I think Luis is the standout, but they're all kind of got a couple of quirks in it, and it does work. Surprisingly to me, David Cross is a really good villain.
He is.
I mean,
the only thing I've ever seen him in is The Strain, the TV show on FX, if anyone's watched that. Other than that, I don't think I've seen or heard of him in anything.
What is he in that TV series on Netflix with Kevin Spacey, isn't he?
House of Cards?
Yeah, so he's in that.
Never watched an episode of it, but I've heard of it. So what kind of character does he play in that?
He just plays a kind of innocent politician that gets a bit corrupted by Kevin Spacey's very dodgy politician.
Aww.
I've only seen the first series, I'm not completely clued up. But he's good in that, and I genuinely think he's got a menacing kind of presence in this.
He's a good villain, especially towards the end when he's wearing the suit and you can see it started to affect his brain. He's got a really deranged look in his eyes. He looks like he would actually kill someone for looking at him wrong.
Well, he almost did, because he kills the guy in the bathroom and just wipes him up with a paper
towel. Oh, that's really fucking grim.
That's grim, man. And you know, I mean, look, I'm not a veggie, but him killing the innocent animals is kind of
that just made me
brutal
hungry.
As well.
I was just craving lamb chops. I know that's fucked up, but I'm just hungry all the time. I'm the only person in the world I know that sees those horrible programs about like battery chickens and then just wants McNuggets. I know it's fucked up. You don't have to tell me I'm a reprobate of the highest or lowest order, but hashtag forever hungry. And on that note.
On that note, I don't know what to say. But I think he looks great as a Yellow Jacket. I think the killer scene in this is, you know, that whole last act. It all builds up to that kind of big finale where they break in and the plan is pretty much going according to plan until he's pretty much aware of the whole thing going on, isn't he, before his eyes. So he's a bit clued up to it. But the comedy really does take place like kind of over the fight scene itself, because the giant ant is a thing of absolute genius to me.
Yeah.
I just saw. And then they keep it as a pet. Engine.
Just any of the giant things. So there's the gnome, the Thomas the Tank Engine. And then the random bits in that fight scene, like the bit where he's got Yellow Jacket lying on the train tracks and then it zooms
and it
out
pans
and you think
out.
It's going to be some gigantic like train crashing all
explosion.
And just falls over.
It falls off the track.
It's one of those things. It's
that whole bit.
Yeah, it's funny for the things you do see and then funny for the things that you don't as well. Because I remember a behind-the-scenes video of that coming out and I was like, whoa, that scene's going to be amazing. And it was just, it was amazing, but for the weirdest possible way.
It's the weirdest action scene that I can remember ever. And it's probably one of the most enjoyable, to be honest, because that like you said, when it pans out and they're having that huge kind of battle and all those lasers are going off and, you know, in their world, the explosions are huge. But in the reality of things, it's this tiny little incident in a bedroom.
Oh, yeah, and it's like a little high school laser show, isn't it? It's just really crappy. And they're throwing train cars at each other and it's surprisingly brilliant.
It is surprisingly brilliant.
And
there's
more action
brilliant.
In it than I thought there was. The more I watch it, the more aware I am of how many action scenes there are.
I think it's about the right balance, you know. I really do. And, you know, looking at, we were talking about CG earlier, but the scenes when he's flying on the back of Anthony.
Anthony.
I know. I knew you were going to say that. And that's the weird thing. How do you get attached to an ant that looks the same as all the rest of them? But they've done that. They did that extremely well.
It's the classic thing. As soon as you give something a name, it's got a personality and you get attached to it.
And they highlight it by calling them a number.
Yes.
You know, they highlight it saying, you called them a number?
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's what you say, is you're just waiting on the name after that because you know you're getting attached to that one in that part. And you know something's going to happen to them as well.
Oh, you really do.
It's one of the saddest death scenes in the whole MCU as well, the way you see his little wing flit into the ground.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, man, to be honest, because you just, he does clearly get attached to him. And, you know, what I loved about it is that it wasn't just about his super strength, you know, when he's shrunk and his all the kind of abilities he gained, but it's also the ants that are the kind of crucial element to it, which I didn't think they would get right, to be honest. And I think they did get right.
Again, that bit of it shouldn't work. Even if you look into it and say, okay, he can shrink himself, so that makes him an excellent spy. And when he's small, he's got the proportionate strength. So if he shoots himself or he's propelled, he's like a bullet. That's okay. You can think, well, you know, he's going to be a really handy fighter. But then when you say, oh, and he can telepathically communicate with ants, you go, fuck off. That's just stupid. But then when you think that that gives him the ability of flight, it gives him the ability to short out electrical equipment and all these things. Yeah. All of a sudden, his arsenal is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you can now see why, from an Avengers point of view, he makes total sense. It shouldn't do. It should make no sense at all, but it works.
And he's not just a guy that, to me, and what you get with Ant-Man, and I think what you'll get with Ant-Man and the Wasp is that he's a criminal. So his mindset, albeit quite innocent, especially the Baskin Robbins scene, which I should have mentioned before.
Yeah.
Absolutely genius. What was the line in that when he says no one escapes Baskin Robbins or something like that? It's just absolutely genius. But I just love that line.
Baskin Robbins always finds out.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the line. And I love it. He's with that absolute no-hoper of a manager, and he's trying to act like he wants a job, and he clearly doesn't want to work in Baskin Robbins. But he's struggling to go straight, and it's finding something for him to ultimately support his daughter, try and get his life back on track. And it kind of works for him as well as, you know, in the role, but equally his skill set in terms of, you know, using the ants to short wire the electricity and break into the building and all that kind of stuff. That's his skill set. You know, that's not just the fighting element to things. And I hope we kind of see more of that in the next film, because that's what is a differential between him and your other MCU kind of characters. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He is a different.
Well, like you say, the fact that he's got a villain, a criminal's mindset, he sees a problem and he sees, you know, a couple of different ways out of it, because he'll be thinking, well, you know, we could do this, where Captain America might think, well, I'm not going to do that because, you know, the police will get involved, where he's thinking, well, you know, fuck the police, we need to do this to get out of this situation. So it's another dimension, isn't it? He's got the ants, he's got the intellect, he's got that slightly different aspect of looking at things.
He's a different character. It's a different actor, you know.
That's possibly why they went for the Scott Lang rather than the Hank Pym.
Yeah.
Because Hank Pym, if you take him on his very, very basic level, he's an inventor like Iron Man. He's a genius scientist like Bruce Banner. You know,
he's like maybe a lesser Iron Man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's an amalgam of like two or three existing people, whereas Scott Lang is completely different. The only way they could make Hank Pym any different is if he did some of his really, really dark storylines, like the whole domestic abuse thing, but I don't see Marvel Disney ever even touching that with a stick.
I don't think Disney... Imagine pitching that to Disney.
Well, especially when everyone knows that Disney is run by Mickey Mouse, so you'd be there pitching it at the, you know, the big giant mahogany boardroom table, and Mickey's at the top crying. It's not going to go down very well.
That's a strange turn on this pod, Stu. That is a very strange turn, even for our pod.
Mickey Mouse is real, and Mickey Mouse runs Disney.
Yeah, well, I didn't see him when I was there, to be honest.
Well, yeah, because he was in meetings. He was preparing for Comic-Con.
Yeah. I saw about 600 of them, actually.
He's a busy fucking... Yeah, but they weren't the real one. The real one, he had very important things to do. He's a busy mouse.
Yes.
Like Santa's.
Yeah, like Santa.
He can't be everywhere.
Exactly. Well, I mean, come on, he's got to look after all the elves, hasn't he? Someone's got to keep the little bastards in track. Why's the Lord spending all day on the internet? It's all right, I'll take my tablets when we're done. I'll be fine.
Good. I was getting a little bit concerned. Is there anything we need to talk about Ant-Man? Are we happy with that? And talk a little bit about the sequel that's coming out next year. Or can we just talk about Giant Man for 5 minutes?
I think we should talk about Giant Man at least for a little bit.
Yeah,
Giant Man is great, isn't it?
It's a shame that they ruined that one, because when I was collecting the pop vinyl figures, and Ben, if anyone follows him, his name's Beav on Twitter, he collects Lego. The Giant Man thing was a closely guarded secret, but then a couple of months before...
Until a giant Lego set came out.
The Lego set and the pop vinyl figure came out, and they confirmed that that character was being done, which was kind of sad, because that would have been the most incredible surprise to drop on people, because I already had my figure on order, so I knew that it was coming.
Yeah.
But still, it was a hell of a reveal. When he did it, that first time when he goes up and he does that amazing laugh and he just grabs hold of... War Machine, and I like the fact they did the flashback to that in the home movie in Homecoming. So you see Peter, and he's like, "Oh, that guy's big now. I gotta go." Just really, you know, that's fine. It's just this guy who's like fucking massive now. No big deal.
On the phone,
yeah, when he's recording it.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just, and that must have been really hard to do as well from a logistics point of view. But
it's a brilliant scene, and obviously his connection then. With the whole Spider-Man doing the Star Wars kind of stuff, and just it's just
oh yeah,
genius.
That old
it's
movie,
proper kind of pop culture. It's a proper kind of pop culture references, isn't it? It just worked so well, and I just think what Paul Rudd brought to that film in such a small part was quite special, to be honest, because you know they were trying to introduce Spider-Man, and Tom Holland was amazing, Black Panther as well. And you had more, you know, it's a Captain America film, do you know what I mean? So it's still focused on Cap and obviously the big thing between Bucky and Cap and Iron Man and stuff. But he had a small role, but it was quite a significant one for me, because he provided the comic relief, because it's not a film where Tony Stark was going to provide any comic relief. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that kind of mindset.
He was withdrawn, wasn't he? So somebody else had to step in and pick up those. All it takes is just a couple of one-liners a few times through the film. That's all you need, just to provide the little bit of relief from the really heavy...
Falcon and Bucky in the back seat helps.
They were great together, weren't they?
And now you've got a nice little relationship between Ant-Man and Falcon, where he calls him Tic-Tac. And he's obviously mortally... He's so...
I forgot about that.
He's
so
embarrassed
ashamed,
now, isn't he? Yeah,
he's got beaten by a fucking rookie. Got absolutely schooled.
Yeah, it does make you question like Falcon's ranking in the MCU. I think he's down there near the bottom, to be honest. Just because he actually improved in Civil War, though, in fairness. Like, I think he's got a little bit more to his arsenal.
I think since the character, they've matured the character on screen, but yeah, previously they made him look a bit daft. But now
they did.
Since they upgraded his equipment, so the wings that can turn into the shield on his back, they've got more missiles and stuff like that. And since they brought Red Wing in, Red Wing's brilliant. Although in the comic, Red Wing's an actual Falcon, like a real one, which would have been weird as shit if they tried to do
you
that.
You couldn't do that. I don't think you could have pulled that off.
No, you'd start pissing off Peter and all the animal nonsense. That's the last thing you need for Disney film.
Peter rather than Peter, but either way, it doesn't matter.
You knew, it doesn't matter. You still knew it meant those animal nonces, so.
Animal nonces. We've gone there on this pod. We have called Peter the animal nonces.
No, technically, I was calling a guy called Peter an animal nonce. I just don't like this one guy called Peter.
You've already said that you wanted lamb chops after seeing a lamb disintegrate. So, you know, we're there already. Animal activists do not like the AI comic pod. That is official.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got some kind of a t-shirt to be made for that. We'll have to get gags on it in the AI design department.
Yeah, it's coming on, man. It's coming on. I haven't seen an AI comic pod t-shirt on order yet. It's slightly disappointing, to be honest.
No, I still need my hashtag stabby ones and shooty ones and scratchy ones. I need that.
Scratchy ones. Is scratchy ones Logan Wolverine? I don't think we've got that before.
I think it might have been Black Panther, maybe.
Nice, nice. We'll take that.
Shooty, stabby, scratchy, yeah. All the major bases.
Yeah, all the major action sequences in the mind of Stu. Yeah. I can imagine you like going as a director, you know, with the big boards, just stabby ones, you know, just, yeah, it'd be genius, you directing Daredevil.
I'm just going to think about that for a few minutes. If a zone out, just give me a nudge.
That's fine. But yeah, we're excited to, obviously, the film next year. I hope it just a bit more of the same, to be honest.
Is it next year?
Yeah, I think so. Is it out before Infinity Wars?
I think it's after, because they said that the Wasp wasn't going to be in it. It was thought that she might have...
I need to look at this. I haven't seen it for a while.
I remember reading something.
That when's Black Panther out?
Oh, you know what? I couldn't tell. My timeline is way off. This year's just completely...
Let's do it. Ragnarok's... Yeah, Black Panther's first. It's out on the 16th of February. And then Infinity Wars... And then Ant-Man versus Wasp is out in July. And then we've got later in the year.
Ant-Man Wasp is the big...
I think Captain Marvel isn't until March 2019, which is a bit later than I thought it was. And then Avengers is out like summer that year. So, yeah, it'll be interesting how they play that.
Ant-Man versus the Wasp is the July. I would have thought they were... For me, Black Panther might have made a bit more sense for that.
Yeah, it seems the May release is kind of their biggie, though, because Guardians has been that, hasn't it? And then...
Although it wasn't MCU, Deadpool was February. I suppose it's because there's no competition.
Yeah, and well, we've got something to promote, which is your excellent Batman podcast.
Yeah, by the time this one comes out, I think the Batman one will have been out a week, maybe week and a half. So Joey and I have done... Joey Connors, that is... I've done a look back at Batman as a whole. So we tried to split the pod, and we did a lot of looking at Batman historically, his allies, his villains. And then we did a little bit about the Rebirth comics. And then we've done our top five recommended reads. And it's a format that we're going to try and use more going forward. So around the release of major films and when TV shows come back, we're going to try and give people... like character profiles and recommended reads, because we've started getting more people coming to us now saying, you know, our Wonder Woman was brilliant, what books would you recommend reading? So we thought, well, it's easier for us to talk about it than it is for us to tweet about it, because we're just so, that there's too much to say in 140 characters. So if anyone's listened to it and has got any feedback, please send it to us.
We really do appreciate feedback.
If you've got any... suggestions for characters that you'd like us to profile, you know, someone that you don't know that much about but you'd like to, if you're interested in getting into the reading side of it, please come at us and tell us what you'd like to see. If we've not read much of them, we'll try and find people that have. We've got half a dozen people, you know, within our ranks, I suppose, that can help us out with these things. And the more comic stuff we can do, the better, really, because we are apparently a comic pod, so kind of makes sense.
It does, yeah. And I like I said, if I get the opportunity to read stuff and come and get involved, I'd love to. I don't have the same background as these guys, and time is always precious, but it's great to read stuff. And I've started getting into more and more stuff, mainly because of, you know, Stu and Joey's love for it and how infectious that is. So, yeah, it's great. And the more chat, the better. And we do really appreciate it. And we want to get more first-time guests on and some great other people we can get involved. I'm hoping Ali's still there.
Yeah, still here.
Yeah, he's still there. I thought you'd completely gone before. Was that good for you, man? Happy with that?
Yeah, brilliant. It's just honestly great to be on. Even just with, like, hearing you two talk about directors and actors, while I have no interest in them, as we discuss about my movie genre watching ability. But it's just so, as you just summed up, it's just infectious. Listening,
you can get a cream for it. It's okay.
Yeah, well, like, and that Batman pod that yourself and Joey did is just brilliant.
I'm glad you enjoyed.
It's just really good. I love the Batman film, even the ones that people are bash.
You love things other people hate, man. Yeah, I love that about you.
Just different. I just love cheesy stuff and like the old. I refer to the old Batman films to be like...
There's always a place for it.
Yeah.
You know, even the bad villains and the bad films. Like, I heard, I can't remember, Seth Rogen or some actor, they're releasing a pod. Not a pod, Jesus. A podcast on the brain, man. They're releasing a film which is about like one of the worst films of all time, but it's like a cult film, and it's kind of clever because he was talking about how bad films are almost remembered, not necessarily more fondly, but just more by people, you know. So these kind of good nondescript films kind of fall into the history of film and no one remembers them. But everyone talks about Bat Nipples and Batman versus Robin. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they still remember
Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do for the right little wrong reasons. Yeah, Mr. Freeze is probably the worst villain ever.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, but I still remember him. Do you know what I mean? And that's the thing. Sometimes it's just a bit of nostalgia, and that's what...
And the shit things make you feel better about the good things as well.
Yeah, they do, man.
When you say how badly Arnie did Mr. Freeze, you think it makes you appreciate Heath Ledger's Joker about 300 times more.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for all the badly directed and badly made comic book films nowadays, they're really hard to find. Do you know what
we're
I mean?
We're spoiled by Marvel.
Yeah, I think we're spoiled in general, to be honest. And I think Stu's right, and I'm not eating massive humble pie, but I think you look at DC, and I think sometimes you've got to realise that it's not always easy to compete with the more established, you know, company, because Disney, like we were talking about pre the pod, just basically rule the roost. You know, they just don't know how to make a bad film, I don't think, anymore. I just think they've got the design so perfectly organised, and they know exactly what the audience wants, that they're just hard to compete with, and you're always going to compare the two, like for like. So,
well, Ant-Man is always my example. I always say if they were able to market Ant-Man and make $500 million, they can...
And the posters were incredible.
They can probably do it with anyone. I mean, if they can do it with a character that's hard to get into, it's no surprise to see what they've done with Iron Man and Captain America and, you know, genuinely likeable, really popular characters.
Yeah. But you look at the buzz for Black Panther as well, just talking briefly. Like, that buzz and the trailer watch and everything, everyone's super excited about that film.
I think it broke being honest, records for being the most watched trailer in 24 hours. It was fucking unbelievable.
But it's bold. I think it's pushing boundaries that, you know, people say Marvel don't push them. They do.
It's the first superhero film led by a black character, and it's a
nearly all black cast.
I was just going to say, you know, it's a very sort of
and Luke Cage is the same, man. To be fair, you know, they're pushing areas which we all appreciate and cause,
well, sadly, a lot
the
of
wrong
don't.
Kind of stirs with the wrong people. But for everyone that appreciates cinema and advancements and the way things are going, I want diversity in cinema in other ways. I want films to stand out and be different, and I genuinely think that Marvel give directors and people that aren't well known opportunities to do that. They don't just go, oh, here's a director that we know will make a film that people will come and watch, like,
you know, what
Michael Bay or whatever with his Transformers shite these days and stuff like that. You know, it's doing things that are a little bit different. And
well, that segues, that. 3 years ago today, I think it's 3 years ago today, Guardians of the Galaxy was released.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
And James Gunn put it up on his Instagram and his Twitter before, and he was saying about how that film changed his life. So that couldn't be a more perfect time to mention that, because you think how different that could have been had they seen him and gone, well, you've not really done any films, you know,
you made a Scooby-Doo film.
Yeah, we want a big name that people have actually fucking heard of.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
we've said it several times now about the guy that's directing Thor Ragnarok.
Mate, have you seen the way he dresses? He's the coolest looking guy.
He's a suave motherfucker.
So different. He's just so different, though. Ali would appreciate his dress sense. He's a very brave man, like you are. And it's great, because you're getting directors that just, as much as I do talk about directors a lot, for me, it's only because I like that they're not just taking people that make paint by numbers films. You know what I mean? People that make the same old tried and tested films are taking people that will take risks and will push back on Marvel and say, no, this is the way it's got to be, because we want a film to be done in this style. And that's why you get these films that we get. And Ragnarok is going to be like no other Thor film we've ever had. And it might not be like no other superhero film you've ever seen. You know, that's the whole point. It's going to be very different. So Yeah, it's been a great time. You know, whenever you talk about Deadpool and Logan and all those films, they're director-driven films these days, and that's why the message that's coming across is just way better than.
You've got to shout out to Patty Jenkins as well for Wonder Woman for the same thing.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
utterly director-driven.
Yeah, exactly. And it wouldn't be the film it is, and none of these films would be the way they are without that. You know, affection and love and effort and time consumption. And, you know, the directors that just turn up and get paid and go home don't make films they care about. Do you know what I mean? They just don't. And they might still make money and they might still get people bums on seats and all that, but they don't make a film that you want to talk about on a podcast. Let's put it that way.
So, no, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. Have you got anything, Ali, that you're promoting, anything that's been written or recorded or anything you're planning?
No, we're kind of on a little bit of hiatus just now from the podcast. Just with the season went over, it was getting a bit repetitive with our guests. So just check out 11 Pieces of Me on World Football Index. We will be back soon with new guests and new episodes soon. But apart from that, just I can't encourage everyone enough just to go back and listen to old recordings of this show. There's some great ones on it. Even when there's subjects that you don't maybe enjoy the movie or per se, just listen to some of the stuff that's on it. It's fun to do.
You're far too kind, Rory. Pay the man.
Yeah,
I would, but I'm poor. I spend all my money on shit.
And a wedding the same as me. We've no money left.
Yes, this is true. All of my money that I've made from selling a load of my Marvel Pops has gone on paying for a honeymoon, although I also bought myself a new amp.
Mickey Mouse just literally raped my bank account, so it's not going to happen, guys.
I had to take a second job on for this wedding.
Well, see, mine's kind of fucked up because I sold a load of things that are Disney Marvel, but I've paid to go to California to go to Disneyland, so...
So they're getting all the money back anyway.
Yeah, so whatever happens, Mickey sat there with a big old pile of my money wiping his arse with it. Fucking bastard.
And on that note, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate Ali coming on, taking the time, and we will get him back soon. Hopefully we will be back next week doing Spider-Man. Yes. Lots of regular pods coming out, so keep in touch with everything AI and all the entertainment channel and everything that goes on our side of things. All right, take it easy, guys. Speak to you soon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.